Shadow Falls Badlands. The story so far. Galen pays a visit to Elias Dunburton, the man he's been sent to Kansas City to see. Dunburton invites Galen to his house, and this is where Galen gives him the package, inside which is an ornately carved ebony box. During dinner, Dunburton believes he recognizes Galen from the war, though Galen denies it. Dunburton asks many questions, especially if Galen knew about the fate of the San Patricio Brigade, a band of U.S. Army deserters who fought for Mexico and were later captured and hung as traitors. The line of questioning makes Galen very uncomfortable, and eventually, he asks to leave. And on his way back to his boarding house, Galen finds himself once again in front of the fortune-telling parlor belonging to the gypsy crone. But this time, a voice inside his head is telling him he needs to go in there and kill her. And that brings us to Chapter 6. The noise in his head forced Galen to cover his ears with his hands. He dropped to his knees, with the slushy water from the sidewalk soaking through his pants. Again, there was a sudden flash, followed by a clap of thunder rumbling from inside his head. From the far echoes of his mind, he could hear her screaming plaintive wails of terror as the knife carved into her flesh. The sound she made, a shrieking as she fell to the dirt, was almost animalistic, feral, as the young girl from his past died in the filthy streets of her Veracruz ghetto. "Be still, you," he hissed through gritted teeth, just as he noticed he was down on all fours like a dog, right at the front door of the gypsy's fortune-telling parlor. And as he looked up from his place on the ground, Galen had no recollection of crawling across the street to get there. There was a click of the lock being thrown, and the creak of the door opening. Galen looked up to find the gypsy crone standing before him, her body outlined in the light coming from her parlor. And from deep inside his mind, a little voice told him what he seemed to know all along, that his arrival here was an inevitability which he could not have changed if he had tried. "Please," Galen pleaded, and the crone stood and stared at him for a long time. Finally, she spoke. "Come in and warm your bones by the fire. I think I know why you're here." He had been sitting by a small cast iron stove for nearly a half hour when the gypsy brought him a steaming mug to drink.
"This will warm your bones for sure."
Galen drank from the mug. What was inside was bitter, but he kept drinking because the warmth of the liquid easing down his throat felt good, and also because something in his mind told him he couldn't have put the mug down even if he had wanted.
"What do you know about your past?" asked the crone.
The question alarmed Galen, raising the hairs on the back of his neck to near standing. And when he didn't answer, she pressed him.
"Where were you born?"
"I don't know," came the response.
"Who are your parents?"
"I don't know."
"When is the date of your birth?"
"I don't know," bellowed Galen.
"There is a curse over you," she mewed, nodding her head. "One that is ancient, one that is unforgiving."
The gypsy spat onto the floor.
"You are an abomination."
To Galen, all this crazy talk coming from the crone buzzed about his head like flies. "I'm a man," he blurted out, "not whatever you're trying to make me out to be."
and the crone's sickly laughter filled the air between them, and that's when Galen started to smell it. The crone's breath stank of disease. Her sallow skin pulled tightly across her skull made him see her for the first time as a corpse. It came as a sudden flash, but there he stood, in his mind's eye, over her dead body. He blinked, and his eyelids suddenly felt weighed down. With effort, he opened them again, but the drowsiness overwhelmed him. He could feel his shoulders go slack as the energy drained from his body.
"Very good," said the crone, grinning.
She ran a bony finger down his cheek.
"Very good."
Galen's eyes opened to the sight of a small white mouse crawling out of a hole gnawed in the baseboard that covered only a couple inches of the torn and yellowed parlor paper. Its pink nose wrinkled, and its tiny red eyes stared back at him momentarily, as if examining him as much as he were examining it. "Hi," Galen whispered, but cut himself off, startled and half-breath, when the shoe heel came down upon the white mouse, smashing it into the floor. Daisy stood there nude, save for the shoe in her hand.
Dirty critter,
Daisy muttered. She looked at the bottom of the shoe, now splattered with blood and bits of fur, before tossing it aside. She crawled back into the bed, getting under the covers while straddling Galen's naked frame.
"Let's go again," she whispered into his ear.
Daisy stared into his eyes, and the wisps of thought Galen was having concerning how he had gotten here were pushed away by her misshapen breast brushing playfully against his chest. She began to grind her hips into his, and Galen could feel his natural response come to life. But as he entered her, he looked up into her face to find it had changed to the ugly visage of the old gypsy crone, her skin pulled tightly around her skull, baring her stained and crooked teeth at him.
"No!" he screamed.
His heart pulsing with fright, he roughly shoved her off him and leapt from the bed. But when he looked back, he only saw Daisy laying there, in her natural form, staring back at him curiously.
I have to leave," Galen told her, nervously gathering his pants from the floor.
"If you're worried about money, you already paid for all night," she said. Galen ignored her. He slid into his pants and shirt and sat on the bed with his back to her to put his boots on. With her duties obviously over, Daisy got up and put on a dirty and tattered silk robe. He picked up his second boot and pulled his foot out when he felt something hard inside. He turned the boot over, and falling to the floor was a small nickel-plated two-shot derringer. Daisy paid no mind, too busy washing herself from a small bowl of water. Galen picked up the gun, holding the rosewood grip in his hand. The flash in his mind overtook him. Instantly, he was back to the previous night in the lair of the gypsy crone. In the lamplight, her bony hand slid the very same derringer across the table to him.
"Bring me that ebony box,"
her voice intoned, her gaze piercing deep into his soul. And then with a flash, he was back in Daisy's shabby room, holding the derringer in his shaking hand. It had been just before daybreak that he left, stepping out into the cold winter air. The streets were already busy, and he dodged carts and horses to make his way from the bar as fast as he could. At first he was disoriented, unsure of which direction to turn. He stumbled across a curb into the arms of a fine-suited gentleman going the other way.
"Watch where you're headed, fool," said the gentleman brusquely as he passed.
Galen turned again, trying to find any familiar landmarks. The first time he had visited that bar, he had been mere blocks from his boarding house. He crossed one street, then another. Finally, he spotted a man loading dry goods into the back of a buckboard.
"Can you tell me the way to Washington Street?" asked Galen. Standing on it, came the answer.
Which direction is the gypsy fortune teller? Galen asked. And looking at him like he was crazy, the man guffawed heartily before going back into the store. Galen looked around. He walked up one side of the street, then down the other. The storefront with the window marked Fortune was nowhere to be found. He had only seen it at night, and while drunk at that, so his only landmark was that window with the wide and crooked letters. Again he tramped up the street, looking carefully at every building as he passed. Perhaps the window was replaced, he reckoned to himself. And as the snow began to fall lightly, he trudged up the length of Washington Street, and then again back down to the waterfront with no luck. It's only there at night, he thought, and as unlikely as he realized that was, he was now certain this was the case. Galen drifted down to the edge of the water and plopped himself down onto a rock by the shoreline. He put his hands in the pockets of his duster and felt the derringer. Pulling it out, he took a long look at the small gun. Hefting it in his right hand, he arched back, about to throw the derringer into the river, before stopping himself. The inside of his head hurt, as if someone had torn a great rift in his mind. Galen violently rubbed his temples. Before him, the river seemed to fade away, and again, he was back in the gypsy's parlor, repeating a scene buried in his mind. Where were you born? I don't know. Who were your parents? I don't know. When is the date of your birth? He rubbed his eyes, watching as the candlelit room disappeared and the river faded back into view. And finally, Galen stood from the rock. He faced the great roaring river, tilted his head to the sky, and bellowed, "Why do I not know?" The world, it seemed, was spinning around him. He could see what felt like the passage of time whizzing past his eyes in a whirlwind of images speeding toward him, random snippets of moments and places long ago buried. Inside his head, synapses fired 100 times their normal rate, causing his entire conscious mind to overload in an overwhelming flood of forgotten thoughts that he was helpless to hold back. And as if landing with a thud, he was there, in a dark place his mind hadn't gone to in over 100 years. His hand ran along the side of a tree. He could feel the rough surface of its bark against his touch, though he dared not look beyond it. No. No, he gasped, and in one big whoosh, it all vanished, the darkness around him, the tree, the woods, and immediately he was back at the waterfront, freezing in the cold morning air. You are an abomination, he heard the crone's voice in his head. And as he sat back on the rock, Galen let his face fall into his hands, and he wept. He stood in the cold for hours, watching the front of the bank, waiting. In his pocket, he held the derringer in his grip. His mind had been made up. He would go through with it. At 5:30, darkness began to fall as the sun set into the winter night. And from his spot on the street, Galen could watch the fiery ball descend below the horizon. And shortly thereafter, Dunburton locked up the bank for the evening and trundled home on his wobbly legs, fully unaware of the man shadowing him down the street. As Dunburton turned toward the waterfront, Galen saw his chance. Picking up his pace, he caught up to the banker's stride and pushed close to the old man. Do as I say and you'll live, Galen told him, jamming the derringer's barrel into Dunburton's ribs.
So what is the meaning of this?
Galen thumbed back the hammer. It was the only answer he needed to give. At Dunburton's house, the banker seemed shaken as his hand reached for the front door. Be very careful, Galen said in a low voice, because I will kill you if I have to. They entered the foyer and Galen put a finger to his lips.
Shh.
Maddie was rattling around the kitchen loud enough for both of them to hear. Anyone else in the house? Galen asked. Dunburton shook his head. His pallor seemed to be turning gray. Galen motioned for them to go directly to the study. Inside, Galen closed the door behind them.
"Please, I beg of you," Dunburton said in a shaky voice. "Don't do this."
"Give me the key," Galen told the banker, motioning to the pocket where he knew Dunburton kept it. Dunburton's fingers trembled as he fished it out and handed it over. Galen went directly to the side table and unlocked the drawer. Inside was the ebony box. Galen picked it up and couldn't take his eyes off it. Finally, he could make out the design he'd noticed before from afar. The box's black exterior was inlaid with intricately carved snakes. Dunburton broke his silence.
"Why did you bother giving me the box if you were planning on stealing it?"
Galen snapped out of his trance-like state, whipping the gun around and pointing it right at the banker's stunned face.
"Be quiet or be dead,"
Galen hissed. Dunburton ignored him, staring right down the barrel of the Derringer into Galen's eyes.
"So I knew I had seen you before, and how you managed to escape death that first time is beyond me. But trust me when I say that it will certainly come looking for you again."
With the back of his hand, Galen smashed the banker in the face, sending the old man crashing to the floor. Galen slipped the box into his pocket.
"You come after me or yell for help, and I will kill you. That, I promise, is not a lie," Galen said.
And as he was about to exit the study, Dunburton spoke.
"You didn't plan on stealing that box until you saw it," he said. "You didn't even know what it was until yesterday. And perhaps you still don't even know."
Galen paused and looked back at the banker, momentarily making Dunburton think he was about to be on the receiving end of a Derringer bullet. And then without a sound, Galen exited the study and slipped quietly from the house.
"You have done well," the crone told him as she led him into her parlor.
Galen brushed past and shook off the winter chill.
"You have it, no?"
Galen reached into his duster and withdrew the carved ebony box and placed it down on her table. In the flickering lamplight of the parlor, the engraved snakes seemed to dance and slither in their own shadow. The gypsy's stare was transfixed on the fabulous object sitting there, her eyes open wide, and her mouth pulled taut with delight.
"I have waited for you for so long," she said, opening the box.
And suddenly her expression changed. Her jaw was slack, her face crestfallen.
"What did you do with it?"
she screeched, dropping the empty box to the floor.
"Tell me!"
Galen stood there, stone-faced, unmoved by her dire pleas.
"You don't understand. You do not possess what you think you have. You do not understand its power," she cried.
"I think I'll manage," Galen told her. "You used me. You played me like a fiddle."
"It's your destiny to be used. Why do you think you were delivered to my door?"
Galen stepped back as if slapped.
"You are not from this world, Galen Altos. You do not belong here."
Galen grabbed the crone by the shoulders and shook her like a rag doll.
"How do you know my name?" he bellowed.
"I can see your past as clear as I see your true face,"
the gypsy said, making the sign of the cross.
"And I know that Galen Altos isn't even your true name."
Roughly, he shoved her backwards against the wall and turned toward the door. But as he took his first step to leave, the crone snatched a heavy pewter candlestick from the table, raising it high above her head with both hands. and as she labored to bring it down upon the back of Galen's head, he spun, Derringer in hand, and fired a single shot, the bullet shattering her teeth before going into her open mouth and exiting through the cardioid artery in her neck. She fell to the floor, convulsing, her hands clutching at the wound, pumping away her life's blood.
"You search for that which you will never receive,"
she hissed with her last breath before dying. And that was Chapter 6 of Shadow Falls Badlands. Exactly what control does Galen have over his destiny? And where exactly will it lead him? More answers will be revealed in time. Big thanks to the band Black Lab for the Shadow Falls Badlands theme song, This Night. And you can find out more about Black Lab at blacklabworld.com. I believe we're coming close to the conclusion of Part 1 of Shadow Falls Badlands. So come back for Chapter 7, because you won't want to miss what happens next. This is Mark Yoshimoto Nemkov, fading to black.
There are things I have done. There's a place I have gone. There's a beast and I let it run. Now it's running this night, wrap it around me like a sheet. I know I'm not forgiven, but I need a place to sleep. So take this night and lay me down on the street. I know I'm not forgiven, but I hope that I'll be given some. There's a game that I play. There are rules I had to break. There's mistakes that I made, but I made them my way. So take this night.